Hello, friends! It's your old pal, Ariel Helwani, back with another edition of DC and Helwani. And as always, a lot going on in the world of MMA. How about Jiří Procházka? What a fight. As exciting as it gets. Also exciting, NBA season. It's about to wrap up. It's coming to an end. Playoffs right around the corner. The New York Knicks are on fire. Absolutely in fuego. Anyway, anytime I want to hear anything about the NBA, I tune in to the Hoop Collective podcast hosted by the one and only Brian Windhorst. He keeps me up to date. Great guests, great panels, great discussions. Check it out. Download and follow wherever you get your podcasts. Also, want to let you know that ESPN Films' latest documentary, 144, executive produced by ESPN Radio and First Take, Her Take podcast host, as well as current WNBA player Chinne Ogumike, takes viewers inside the WNBA's unprecedented 2020 season. 4 months after the WNBA postponed its season due to the coronavirus pandemic, the league set out to play a condensed season entirely in a bubble where 144 players across 12 teams not only came together to play basketball, but also dedicate their season to social justice. 144 will premiere May 13th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. The film will then be available on ESPN Plus. Check it out. All right, on to today's show, and as always, listener discretion is advised. Enjoy.
Now making their way to the microphone, DC and Helwani.
And also, I was about to say something else. I'm sorry.
Did yeah, I don't know what happened there. What happened?
I was like, I short-circuited.
Are you done or not?
One of those spice peppers went into my throat I was finishing my thought.
Here's Daniel Cormier and Ariel Helwani.
Back in your life on this first week of May 2021. Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to a brand new edition of DC and Helwani. That's DC. Daniel Cormier. I'm Helwani, Ariel Helwani. And I have to say, I've known DC for, I think, about 11 to 12 years.
11 years, at least. 12 years, yeah.
We had our first interview fight
in 2009, you know, in the Apple store. You know, it's very well documented. Mm-hmm. It's one of our favorite stories to tell.
Yes. Well, we just had our first fight. I just want to let the world know we just had our first fight. We are currently fighting.
About what?
You know, you'd be sleeping on the couch if we were, you know.
Wait. I don't even understand. Like, you're acting really weird right now because I don't even know we're involved in a fight.
These are the facts as I know them. Last night, your Rockets just laid an absolute stinker. I mean, goodness. It was embarrassing. I think my New York Urban Professionals Basketball League could play better than this team. I mean, it was just, I'd be hitting threes in the corner, you know, from Christian Wood. I mean, it was just embarrassing. And I just, you know, felt I was feeling myself. And
this that was bad.
It was horrible, but it was great.
Bad. It was bad, and it was bad that you did what you did.
No, not at all. Because
it was
you would
bad that you did what
but
you did.
But then you take things up a notch, and you tag my childhood idol, Thurman Thomas, who, by the way, I've tagged in multiple posts over the past year change, never acknowledges me, never likes my tweets, never retweets. And then you tag slandering my name, and he then likes it. I wake up to a like tweet from Thurman Thomas.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that is messed. That is also
a text message.
What? A subsequent text?
Also a text message from
Thurman. Your text buddies with Thurman?
Yes. Hey, listen, not only was there a like, there was a text message in regard to your behavior. Because Thurman said, I understand how much he loves the Bills. But Daniel, it's very off-putting for him to behave in this manner.
Listen,
I'm telling you right now, Thurman Thomas told me.
I want to see it.
I cannot believe that Ariel is not acting as if he's been here before. I said, I know, man. It's sad. It's sad. But you know what? I said, one mission. I roll with the Rockets. You know, we're 14-47 right now, and we seem to be in the driver's seat in the Cade Cunningham sweepstakes. It'll be one year before we're back where we need to be.
But by the way,
Uncle Thurman said to act as if you've been there before, Helwani.
You got the Oklahoma State running backs mixed up. You know that, right? Barry Sanders.
So I know Barry Sanders wouldn't celebrate, but Thurman wouldn't go crazy. Thurman wouldn't go crazy. Let's not act like Thurman Thomas was out there dancing like Icky Woods. Thurman wasn't doing the Icky Shuffle or nothing like that.
He was not.
Like Thurman. Thurman carried.
Why can't you be happy for me as a friend?
I'm happy.
And someone who has never experienced any kind of success Why can't you, as far as my fan, my fandom is concerned, why can't you be happy for me? Why can't you jump on the bandwagon?
I'm happy for you. I got a cousin named Craig.
Oh, I love Craig.
For some reason talked about the Knicks were going to be good. He just was so sure. He was like you. He never gave up on the Knicks. So I'm happy for you guys. But just because you are having success does not mean you need to push the other guy down to elevate yourself. Hey, we're trying over here. We were left with a very difficult situation in Houston. You know that. We went from having Russell Westbrook and James Harden.
Yeah, James got out of town.
To now, it's just Christian Wood because John Wall got shut down. I mean, come on, Ariel. Y'all are picking on us at this point.
You know what you remind me of? You remind me of a lumpy rug. I mean, no one likes to be around a lumpy rug, right? I mean, it's
all. What do you mean, Doug?
That's what you are. You're a lumpy rug, and it's fitting because today is National Lumpy Rug Day. I mean, who would celebrate such a thing? I mean, honestly, let me tell you something. In the past year of us doing this, there have never been this many wacky holidays on a particular day. National Lumpy Rug Day, National Garden Meditation Day. I mean, what are you supposed to do? Go in the back. I mean,
Go
I guess
in
you
the backyard and meditate.
Yo, check this one out. National Two Different Colored Shoes Days. Shoes Day. What? Are you supposed to wear two different color shoes? Who does that? What kind of kid does that? National Chocolate Custard Day. National Raspberry Popover Day. I don't even know. Is that like a tart? What is that? What is that? Like a Pop-Tart? I like this one. National Textiles Day. My dad, you know, that's what he did for a living. Textiles.
So that's clothes?
Yeah, clothes. You don't know what textiles is? What's wrong with you? Textile. This is a very, very, very important one today. All jokes aside, World Press Freedom Day. I don't pretend that I'm some, you know, serious journalist who goes out there to tell the truth about all the bad people in the world. But there, but there's a lot of people out there.
Tell the truth.
And you know what's crazy? I'm not going to name them all, but there's like 85 Labor Days today all over the world. Apparently, May 3rd is Labor Day in many parts of the country. Or no, not the country, the world, all over the world. Labor Day, Labor Day, Labor Day. I mean, it's everywhere. Spring Festival in Egypt. I mean, May 3rd is lit. May 3rd is lit on the calendar. I don't know what's going on here. We got Cinco de Mayo coming up. We got May the 4th be with you tomorrow. We got, you know, National Orange Juice Day tomorrow. But May 3rd is lit. Yes.
When you say stuff like lit, and what was the other one you say, what like the kids say?
No cap, no cap. let me tell you something. I looked at this list and I was like,
cap, like the kids say. Hey, bro, like we're asking Daniel, like, Daniel, is that cap or no cap? Because I don't know the difference. I can't really tell, you know. I'm an old man. You know, I noticed yesterday how old I am, right? Because I was sitting at my table. And I was going to eat ice cream. I haven't had ice cream for a little bit. And I chose orange. What is the orange? Sherbet. Oof. I'm sitting there eating.
That is old man. That is an old man choice right there. You and that hat sitting on the porch eating orange sherbet.
Baby eating orange sherbet. I'm like, dang. It's like, boy. The orange sherbet was that was it whenever I was young, you know. I'm sitting there eating orange sherbet, man. It was bad. I really had to check myself. Like, Daniel, you are steering way too much into this old man.
Getting all sweaty. Well, let me tell you who's not old. Let me tell you who's not old. Let me tell you who's a spry 28 years old. The pride of the Czech Republic, Jiří Procházka. Let's give this man his due. What a win on Saturday. Oh, my gosh. By the way, what a fight. That first round, I mean, relentless pace. Him and Dominic Reyes back and forth, back and forth. I mean, just balls to the wall. We'll be talking about that first round. You're right there. What's going on?
I'm trying to calm down from like those holidays and all this other, like you, like, come on, man.
And then the spinning back elbow, just the third in UFC history. The guy's got the hair. He's got the look. He's got the fighting style. He's got the winning streak, 12 in a row, 2-0 in the UFC. This man is on fire. And DC, I'm here to say he should not fight anyone else. He should fight for the belt next. He should fight the winner of Glover Teixeira versus Jan Błachowicz in September. He should fight the winner of that fight. You can't mess this up, right? This guy is special.
You know, when I watch Jiří Procházka, because I was saying his name all wrong the whole time, Jiří Procházka, I could not believe what I was watching because I watched him fight Volkan, right? Mm-hmm. And I watched him just kind of chase Volkan down the whole time until eventually he landed that right hand that knocked him out. I mean, I got this like long hair that's like right in my like my sight or something. But
talk about getting old.
I mean, talk about getting when you start growing hair up here hair, on your like, face. Yeah, I know. I it's bad.
In the
it's
ear.
Really bad. In your yeah. ear.
Oh.
That doesn't happen to everybody though. You know that. I've told you that before, but I'm sorry. You're Prohoshka. You know that only white men ears keep growing. Like mine won't keep growing. Like yours will be like this big, but like black men's ear, our ears stop growing. Yours will just keep growing. So yours will be like this big, right? Like as you get like 70. I'm telling you, when you're in the airport, look at an older white gentleman and look at an older black gentleman. You'll see the difference in the ear size. But back to your Prohoshka. I'm sorry. I get off track. The guy, as I said in my tweet on Saturday, once he gets rolling, it's so hard to deal with that type of pressure and willingness to fight. I know everybody's in there fighting, but not everybody's willing to just take punches, willing to just throw caution to the wind with technique. He's not just throwing anything, right? He's doing things with a purpose, even though he's doing them in a bit of a reckless way. I think he's special because he wasn't even tired. Most times when you set that pace in round one, the second round starts a little bit slower. And as the fight progresses, it slows down more and more and more. Jiří didn't slow down. And I got to be honest with you, watching Dominic Reyes after round one, it felt like it was only a matter of time before Jiří got to him. Because every time Dom landed those nice counter right hands and left hands, dude wouldn't even blink. He would just continue down the path. And he's an avalanche, man. He's an avalanche going downhill, and there is nothing that is going to stop him unless you can knock him out. And I don't know who can do that outside of maybe the champion, Jan Błachowicz.
Well, let me ask you this, because it does feel like I even said this after the Volkan fight. His style is so unorthodox. He is a little reckless. He does get hit a lot. Can this style last? Like, once you start fighting the upper echelon, and maybe light heavyweight is the division where it could last because, you know, there's no John Jones there anymore. There's no super duper star out there knocking people out, even though Jan is on quite the roll. It feels like you're going to get tagged big time. You know, like these punches are going to add up. No, but these
punches are going to get,
right? It's a crazy thing to say, you know, for a guy that's won 12 in a row, but like, should he try not to get hit as much?
Well, I mean, the chin, right? Eventually, the chin can only take so much damage.
Right.
Right. You can only take so many shots. Right now, obviously, he's not at that point because he walks through punches from guys like Dominic Reyes, who you know hits unbelievably hard. Look at what he did to Chris Weidman. Look at what he did to so many guys on his run-up to becoming the title challenger. So Prohoshka has he's very durable. But every time you get hit as an athlete, every time you get hit as a fighter, there's always like something coming out of the bank. And he keeps getting hit like that with 4-ounce gloves. It'll make it hard to sustain that over a long period of time. But in the meantime,
yes,
in terms of short term, I don't know how you stop this dude without putting him on his back and keeping him there. I think you got to take this dude down in order to slow him down, because he can take a shot, and boy, he's got some really dynamic offense.
So we know that Jan and Glover are fighting September 4th because of that style, because of how funny he is, because he's got some momentum, and again, the winning streak. Do you agree with my stance that they should save him now for the winter? Like, it's very rare that you go 2-0 in the UFC and get a title shot, but let's be honest, light heavyweight is wide open.
But yeah, he fought, right? Like, he's not like he's fought. But normally at 2-0, and I'm gonna talk about Khamzat, right? This is the last guy that we've seen that's had this type of hype coming into the UFC. But Khamzat fought two dudes, I can't even remember their names, and Gerald Meerschaert.
John right? Phillips, Reese McKee.
Phillips and Reese McKee, right? He fought those two young guys, and he fought Gerald Meerschaert, who's a guy that has been around for a while, but has never been, you can't mistake him for a top 10 guy. Because he's never been there. This dude, Jiří, has fought Volkan Ozdemir, who was probably like 6 at the time, and had fought for the UFC championship.
Knocked him out.
And he fought Dominic Reyes, who had fought for the UFC championship and was ranked number 3 in the world. So it's not like he has taken a slow approach to making his way into the title picture. He really came in here, took his opportunities and grasped them, and he should be fighting for the belt.
So here's the thing. Spoke to his team briefly. Obviously, they're pumped. But if you actually look at it, like if that title fight goes down in September, there's no way. I mean, unless something crazy happens and it's a
January-ish time, right?
Does this guy want to wait till January, February? And they said he probably doesn't. The guy that he's wanted to fight for quite some time is Alexander Rakic, who's a tough out, who's coming off a fight that kind of left people ho-humming, but would certainly deserve to be in that conversation with Jiří. Do you risk it against a tough guy like Rakic, or do you just keep him on the sidelines and wait for the title fight?
I think if you're Prochazka and you want to fight, right, you do Rakic, because then there is no question as to whether or not you're getting the title fight. If you can get through him.
I think he's getting it regardless of if he fights
again. But there is no question, and you get to fight, right? This is a young guy that wants to fight. He's active. He wants to keep going. He said that he could have been in the UFC before. He took his time getting here. Mm-hmm. So now that he's here, why not take full advantage of it? But you got options. You can either have those two fight right now, or you have Prochazka just go as the alternate, especially with Glover being the age that he is. You know what I'm saying? Maybe one of the guys don't make the fight. So you kind of train alongside those guys in the title fight. And if somebody falls out, then you step right in there. Because what you don't want is to wait. Right. Right. But you don't want us to just be sitting on the sideline as the next guy. And then they call you and say, hey, we got an opportunity for you in 5 weeks.
Perfect world. That light heavyweight title fight is happening next week or something. And then you just keep him. What I would love, I want to see more of this guy. He's so much fun. I mean, I got to be honest, this main card starting at 10 p.m. I was having flashbacks of the old days. You know, it's 12:30 and I'm trying to stay up and watch these fights because let's be honest, the card at times was a little bit slow. This guy comes and he's like a jolt of adrenaline. He is so, everything about him, the look, the style, the dancing. Haircut. I mean, everything is just tremendous. I wouldn't hate if they put, look, if you can't beat Alexander Rakic, you shouldn't be fighting for the title anyway. So maybe they put them on that card as a potential backup, but also as a number one contender fight. The only other option would be Anthony Smith, who just won. I think that would be a fun fight as well. No, you don't like that?
I do. It's a fun fight. But I believe for Anthony Smith, as he has gotten back to rolling a little bit, right? His momentum's starting to come back. But once again, he fought Jones. He lost to the other kid that you just named, Rakic.
Oh, Rakic, yeah.
He lost to Rakic, and then he lost to Glover, right? So he's fighting the best of the best. Now we're talking about Anthony with the momentum coming back. But he has kind of taken a step back in competition. Mm-hmm. We always talked about not getting tune-up fights in the UFC. Well, he fought Devin Clark, and he fought Jimmy Crute. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, sure, this makes introduction back to the highest of levels. But I believe that Anthony could use another one of those fights where he just gets his confidence back and work his way back slowly towards getting back in the championship picture.
By the way, you know who's the last person to beat Jiří Prochazka? You don't know?
No idea.
What a run.
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
I didn't know who Jiří Prochazka was until Saturday night.
Get out of here. He beat Volkan.
I saw the highlight, and I was like, oh, that's that dude.
Wait, you were there when he beat Volkan.
No, I wasn't. That was on Fight Island.
You didn't go to Fight Island the first time? UFC 251?
No, I didn't go to first. Remember, I was fighting at 252.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
So, this dude, I didn't know who Jiří was. I saw a guy knock out Volkan Ozdemir. I just didn't know who it was. And then when I was watching the fights on Saturday, I was like, oh, it's this dude. I thought this dude, Jiří Prochazka, had fought like 3-4 times in the UFC. And then they started saying he only fought 2 times. I was like, wow, he hasn't fought since he beat up on Volkan last summer.
Yeah.
Wow, this dude's the real deal.
Well, they were supposed to fight in February, and then the fight got postponed. But, like, his run of 12 fights, KO, 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 TKO, 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 KO, TKO, TKO. Last decision was back in 2016. He's the Ryzen light heavyweight champion, and then he had another one. The last time he lost, DC, December of 2015. I believe you know this man who beat him, King Mohammed Lawal.
Oh, Mo beat him. Wow, I didn't know that.
And then he beat Mo in a rematch in 2019. He also has a win, by the way, over Vadim Nemkov, who's the Bellator light heavyweight champion.
Oh, that's the guy. That's the guy that Mo lost to last fight. That was Mo's last fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh.
Now it's all coming together.
Now it's all making sense. I'm like, okay, it all makes sense. But I know who he is now. Look, man, when you are watching as much as we doing this stuff, it's hard. There's 500 guys on the roster now. Yeah. That's why I'm so.
You're not staying up till 3 a.m. to watch Rising.
That's why I'm so proud of you, that you can just know all these people.
Well, thank you.
Very nice. That's why you're so good at your job. You're good at your job. You're really good at your job, because for you to know all these dudes, crazy. I know them when I'm watching them.
Let's talk about Dominic Reyes here for a quick second as we're glowing over Jiří. My heart breaks for this man. DC, I thought he beat, people got mad at me for saying that on Saturday, in my opinion, and I think we must have forgotten a little bit. Like, I thought he beat John Jones 3-2. And think about how life changes, right? You're the first guy to beat John Jones. You're the light heavyweight champion. Your confidence is riding high. Instead, you lose a razor thin decision. You're in your feelings. You're down. You got to get back up to fight Jan Błachowicz. You get knocked out in your chance to right that wrong. And now you're staring at a 3-fight losing streak, and you've gotten knocked out brutally in your last 2 fights. Man, what a turn of events for this guy who's still young, but sheesh, that Jones fight now looms large.
I had this conversation the other day with one of my buddies, and he was saying that there's a lot of times that luck comes into play in this thing, right? You lose to Jones in the way that Dominic lost. Something's taken away from you, that invincibility that comes with being undefeated, right? Regardless of if you thought you won, that O is gone now. So that level of invincibility is gone. You go into the Jan Błachowicz fight still believing I'm the man. And then that happens. Now you start to question everything, right? So it's a matter of what's next. And I always talk about, and I relate this to the situation with us, right? I lost to Jones, was now not undefeated anymore, was going to go fight Ryan Bader. Had I lost to Ryan Bader, my whole career would have been different. But instead, you're fighting for the championship again. That's easy to get motivated for. It's a lot of luck, and a lot of things have to go in the right way. But for Dominic Reyes, he went from top of the world to now, every time he goes in there, man, it's going to be a question. Like, wow. Like, and also, when you're a guy, like a football player, right, that which is what he did all his life, he wrestled too, but when you're a football player and you are so used to kind of running through people, and now you've been equaled and exceeded on multiple occasions back to back, those questions are going to be hard to kind of deal with, because not only has he been beat, the Jan fight was bad for him to do that, the chicken dance and then fall down and get finished, bad. But what happened the other day when you get slumped over like that and you're face down on the ground, that stays with you. So I don't know what comes of this dude. I think he needs to take a break, take some time, some real time. I know January to April is a while, but
September.
September. I'm sorry. Yeah. September to April is a while. But I wouldn't be mad if Dominic Reyes is gone for about 12 months.
Yeah.
To try to figure out and like really reset, get away from this thing, train and have fun, but not really train with the idea of, I got to get back to the belt. Because that's what people do when you lose, right? It's like everything you do on every single day is, how do I get back to the belt? And I think when you can let go of that, you can really start to enjoy the process again, enjoy the journey of fighting. And then once you enjoy the journey of fighting, then you can start to win fights again like Anthony Smith, and then hopefully get on a run back to the belt. Anthony said it himself. He goes, when I let go of the championship, I started to get better at fighting. And he said, today I'm better than I was before, because now I was able to just learn free of that title aspiration.
One thing is for certain, he needs to take a step back in competition whenever he comes back. I mean,
how, right? Like we talked about this, like not everybody gets what Anthony got, Devin Clark. And I think Devin Clark was last minute. He was supposed to fight somebody else before. He ended up fighting Devin Clark. So, and God, I'm not disrespecting Devin, but there's like a top 4 or 5 guys, and then there's everybody else, you know?
Well, speaking of the top 4 or 5, Jiří's in that mix. It's going to be interesting to see if he decides to keep fighting or wait for the winner. But all of a sudden, there's some action, some activity at 205. You got some fresh blood.
And then the champ called him out. When you get the champ calling you,
that would be a big deal. Poland, Czech Republic, their neighboring countries. It would be a that fight, if it happens, if Jan beats Glover, that fight would be massive in Eastern / Central Europe. They got to figure, like, that fight can't be happening in Texas. You know what I'm saying? Like, if it can't be happening in Florida, it has to happen over there. It would be a very big deal. Giga Chikadze of the Republic of Georgia with a big win over Cub Swanson. Vicious liver kick. Your boy Iwan fought to a draw against Dustin Jacoby. Sean Strickland continues to win. Merab Dvalishvili continues to win as well. So overall, some highlights here and there. A bit of a slow one at times, but everyone was glowing about Jiří Procházka on Saturday. So then we transition over to this weekend, and this is a weird one, DC, because this to me, as far as like non-pay-per-view fights, was maybe my most anticipated non-pay-per-view main event thus far. TJ versus Corey.
I'm about to say something. You know, I have no idea who's fighting this weekend.
Well, it ain't happening.
I really don't know who's fighting. Okay.
Wait. It's not happening.
Wait a minute. It's Dillashaw. I thought I worked this fight card.
Nah.
I worked this weekend.
It was supposed to be Dillashaw versus Corey Sandhagen. TJ Dillashaw versus Corey Sandhagen. But I would hope that you saw 6 or so days ago that Dillashaw cracked open his head and the fight is now postponed. Unfortunately, this is where it gets a little funky. So the front runner, what I reported that night after the news came out that he was officially out of the fight because he was trying to stay on, but it's just not going to work. It's a pretty gnarly cut. He posted it on his social media. The front runner to replace it was /is Michelle Waterson versus Marina Rodriguez. But even on the broadcast on Saturday, they didn't acknowledge that fight. Waterson and Marina have already acknowledged that there's the main event this weekend. They weren't even on the card. They're a new fight. You also have Jeff Neal versus Neil Magny. But as of right now, it's kind of like all up in the air as to what the main event is in 5 days.
Really?
Waterson and company, they're going to Vegas. So maybe they switch it and they put that as the co-main. But what I was told was they signed on to fight a 5-round main event fight on May 8th.
So who else would fight?
Maybe not 5 rounds, but maybe you just bump up Jeff Neal and Neil Magny.
Neil Magny, that's a great fight. I got to be honest, man. Like, you know, when you start to sit at home and enjoy like life, you forget that you have to work. So I think I got to start working on I got to start getting my research ready for this weekend because I am working.
You are working?
I'm working this weekend.
Wait, up until a minute ago, you thought you were working the TJ Dillashaw Corey Sandhagen card, or did you know
didn't know when they were fighting? Like, yeah. Just had no idea when they were fighting. Like, I would get an email that's telling me that there's fighting meetings coming up in a couple of days. So,
I'm sad.
I'm working the Waterson versus
Marina
fight. Yeah, Marina.
Well, I have to say, I'm very sad. I was really looking forward to that.
That was the one, right? Because Sandhagen's a future champion.
Tell him.
Sandhagen's a future champion.
I have put my reputation on the line with that one.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have.
I don't say that about a lot of people, by the way. But so it sounds like they're going to try to rebook that fight for July or June. June seems a little soon, to be honest. I mean, it's already May 3rd. Maybe they put that on the June 12th card, which we found out on Saturday. It's going to happen in Glendale, Arizona, site of the final WEC card. By the way, weirdly enough, site of the first Izzy Vittori fight. The first Izzy Vittori fight happened in Glendale, and the second is happening in Glendale. Like, what are the chances of that?
I remember that fight. You know, I was my first I think it might have been one of my first. No. I commentated in Portland first time. Hmm. But I commentated Izzy Vittori. And boy, Vittori was on me for years about my commentary. Told me that I was favoring Adesanya.
I'm shocked. Wow, I'm shocked. Vittori was mad about something you said about him?
Let me tell you something. Shocked. Regardless of if I am like saying something, I don't judge the fights. Like, so Marvin, the judges thought you lost. Not me. There were a ton of people in there. Like, they didn't hear me. We weren't in the empty apex. So, yeah, like, it was a close fight, and he did well. I'm glad that he's getting a rematch. So, but, yeah, back to Glendale. That'll be fun.
So, this weekend, all up in the air, we were supposed to get TJ versus Corey. We hope to get it. By the way, not the only fight we lost on that card. We were also supposed to get Donald Cerrone versus Diego Sanchez.
Oh, man.
And so let's talk about this for a second.
What is happening, Doug?
Diego Sanchez, unfortunately, no longer a member of the UFC roster. The first Ultimate Fighter winner, because remember, he won earlier in the night, and then it was Bonner Griffin. has lasted all this time, one of the most unique characters in the history of this game. And
just like we've seen him grow up.
Yeah.
We saw the phases, right? The nightmare to the guy when
dream.
He was, yes.
Daniel Bryan owes him.
Was that?
Daniel Bryan owes him. He got the yes thing
from
him.
He started the whole yes thing, right? Yes. And then even from that to what I still consider one of the most veteran moves in all of mixed martial arts history. I'm down in Jacksonville. No. Albuquerque. Rio Rancho.
Yeah.
I'm in Rio Rancho. Guy lands an illegal blow on Diego. Bang.
Shopping.
Diego's on a win streak. Mm-hmm. Diego looks at the official. Losing, mind you. Losing. And they go, if I can't continue, do I win the fight? The guy goes, can't continue. Diego, you know, okay, I can't do this.
Yeah.
Boom! He went up there, and Diego got his hand raised. And he stuck his chest out. And listen, I was so complimentary. That's a veteran move by Diego Sanchez. And now it's all over. And I don't understand what's happening.
Well, so here's my thing, DC. How do we handle this? There is something very weird going on here. I think everyone can admit that. I got to be honest with you. We talk about like World Press Freedom Day. I don't even know if I want to say his coach's name because this guy, the last time I had him on my show, no joke, no cap, 30 straight text messages afterwards. And let me tell you, bizarre freaking text messages, threatening text messages.
To you?
Yes, to me.
What?
And I'm like, I don't want
questions.
This guy is, I mean, look, have you seen him?
I've met him. They attack me.
What happened? So tell us. So how are we going to handle this? Are we going to say who we're talking about? I mean, I feel like
I think it goes without the name, right? Like, so when you
let's
get
just
guy,
say
like,
this man's name is Joshua Fabia. Yeah, he has taken Diego under his wing. He's from the school of self-awareness. And ever since.
I mean, but have you ever met anybody that's less self-aware?
I mean, it's.
Have you ever in your life met somebody that's less self-aware?
How about putting out these videos thinking that it makes them look good in the fighter meetings?
Worse.
It makes them look 1,000 times worse. Well, what are you thinking, guys? What is
my
going
boy,
on?
Felder goes, what the beep are you talking about? Hey, Felder goes,
Felder looked amazing in that.
But that's the thing, right? Like, you're in this fighter meeting. And this is Paul Felder. Paul Felder is a fighter. He's not just a broadcaster. You can't attack him in that way. He's going to say something to you. And then, like, Felder's, like, offended. Like, yo, get out. What are you doing? Like, we're here to talk to Diego. But that's the problem. The guy starts to become so important. He wants to be such a massive part of what's going on that he imparts himself in ways that he should not be involved. So even Hunter Campbell handled that about as good as anyone I've ever seen in my life handle a situation like this, because you can tell what the guy's doing. You can tell what he's doing. It's almost like they were trying to build a lawsuit or something against the UFC with the line of questioning that they were going down. But this guy, and you could tell when it's this guy and not Diego Ariel.
The whole thing is
Diego's
like off to the side.
After the fight, Diego's like direct messaging me on Instagram. And I'm like, this isn't Diego, right? Mm-hmm. It's not him. Because Diego's always been a sweetheart.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what he did to get, listen, man, from the yes to all the other things that Diego was. And I like the guy. He was always a gentleman. But Diego was always very, guide him. And when the wrong person gets a hold of a person that has that kind of followers mentality or is a little bit not as strong willed here, they can really take you down the path. And I feel like that's exactly what's happening with Diego right now. And this guy's a bad guy, man. I'm telling you, the dude is not caring about Diego and Diego's best interests, because it's just so apparent. And I don't even understand what he's doing. Like, from him just cornering Diego alone at one point. Then now Stefan Bonner's there, him and Stefan together, to the way that Diego was fighting with the karate style and like trying to block everything. And then after the fight, that Rio Rancho fight, they talked to me about all the times that Michelle missed him. Right. I'm like, but Diego, you're still losing the fight. I actually had I was arguing with I don't believe it was Diego, Josh, on Instagram Messenger about the way that the fight went down. It's crazy.
It's very sad. And I want to focus on Diego for a second because Diego's a legend. He's a Hall of Famer. His career should not, at least in the UFC, should not have ended this way.
No.
One of the great characters in our sport. And he should have been able to end on good terms. And it's sad to see one of the, you know, the pioneers of this sport kind of ruin the relationship that he had with the UFC, because, you know, Dana admires him and you know that Dana would try his best to treat him well on the way out. I believe that in my heart. And this guy, Joshua Fabia, is trying to use Diego's stature. He found a guy that would let him into his world. And you see him, you know, barge into these meetings. You see him go after the broadcast team. You see him going after media members just to, you know, make his situation better, just to get his name out there, just to fix his own reputation. I don't like this. It's a really disturbing turn of events, the likes of which we have rarely seen in this sport. And I really feel for Diego. And I know that Josh is going to get mad at me. And I know he's going to say this is the media and whatnot. We are just going off, Josh, what you put out there. And we are all very self-aware of this situation and of ourselves. No one would behave this way. No one does behave this way. Let me just say one last thing. When you're a top fighter, DC, you have a coach. The best coaches are the ones like Trevor Whitman, who want nothing to do with the limelight, who want to be off to the side.
Bob Cook. Like,
you never hear this guy. You never hear. I don't even know Bob's voice, what it sounds like.
Yeah.
This guy wants to come in and start berating people and tell me, like, get out of here with that nonsense.
It's crazy.
It breaks my heart to see this.
I get this thing from Diego a while back. I said, hey, you understand, I'm a supporter. You're one of my favorite people in the UFC. Call the fights as I see them. I don't know that you're doing the breathing technique, Diego, is when he's doing this, like blowing the bubbles. I said, I saw you blowing bubbles. I call the fight as I see it. I thought you made the right decision by not continuing. Come on, Diego. And then the message was like, watch the fight in slow motion and get back to me. You never asked my corner anything. I was like, I didn't speak to your corner in the meeting because I didn't have anything to ask him. We talked to the fighters, but this is not Diego I was talking to. Yeah. And I mean, this went on for, message after message, like just long.
I'm telling you, the same thing. I had the same experience. The last time he was on my show was 2 years ago. And there was a day and I said, can you please stop? Can you please stop? It just boom, 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 boom. And then at the end, it just got weird.
I think it's universal, from Dana saying it to the way Sean and Hunter. Love that Sean called him with Hunter on the phone, right? And then they did the right thing. Hey, if a guy says that he's not capable or able to compete, we're going to pull you right now. Like, we're going to pull you. They still paid Diego. Diego still got paid.
Yeah.
Right? This is one of those instances. Remember last year when Bellator paid all those guys their show bonuses because the fight got canceled and everybody went crazy. Mm-hmm. This is one of those instances that happens all the time in the UFC. They paid Diego win and show as he was on his way out the door. Because imagine, dude don't get that last payday. Because there's no guarantee he was going to beat Cowboy Cerrone. But instead, you pay him his money. You wish him luck. Only because they care about Diego. Dana has a soft spot for Diego. But this Josh Fabia, man, he's a bad guy. And
you just see his intentions. You see his vibe. Like,
they're so clear.
He's out there is
his intentions are clear that he's not trying to do what's in the best interest of his athlete. And he's a selfish person, man. And Diego needs to – you hope that at some point he wakes up, right? Because this guy is going to guide him into the next thing that elevates his platform, right? That gives him a platform to spew the nonsense that he spews. So don't be surprised if you don't see Diego in bare knuckle fighting or something, just so that this guy still has a way to try and keep himself relevant. It's unfortunate.
I know part of him wants this, us talking about him, and in his mind, us quote unquote, you know, talking bad about him. The truth is, anyone involved in this sport, fan, media, fighter, I think loves and respects Diego Sanchez. This has nothing to do with him. And I think all of us are disturbed that this guy is guiding him in this way and representing him in this way. So I just want to say, I wish the best for Diego. We all have had great experiences with him. He's truly one of a kind. And I hope that he sees the light at some point and recognizes that this man isn't looking out for his best interest. He's looking out for his own best interest.
He's trying to raise that self-awareness school thing that he's got going on. So,
I
mean, obviously the guy must have a lot of charisma. The guy must have an ability to talk and draw people in, because now Stefan is following him too. So it's like, you know, he it's almost like these targets, right? The targets are the people that can be influenced, and it seems like he's doing that.
So. Okay, so from one bit of a weird story to another, we did get some sort of conclusion to Donation Gate between Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier. But in the end, Conor throws a curveball and donates the previously agreed upon $500,000 to a quote unquote charity, a Boys and Girls Club in Lafayette, but one that was not affiliated with Dustin's Good Fight Foundation. Now, Dustin, I spoke to last week, had nothing bad to say. He said, at the end of the day, as he put it, charity wins. I don't care if it goes to me or someone else. Clearly, he had plans with that money. He was going to open a gym and all this stuff. How do you feel about the way this all ended between the two of them? Clearly now, the good vibes are no more.
It makes me happy, right? Because ultimately, those kids get that money. Mm-hmm. And people don't understand how much that's going to mean to those kids down in Lafayette. They need all the help they can get, man. And those Boys and Girls Clubs, I grew up in them. I grew up in those, right?
Arcadia?
In Acadiana.
Acadiana.
Yeah. That's just our parish, Acadiana Parish, which is the, you know, Lafayette's a city within that parish. But we would sit behind each other waiting to play foosball. You remember foosball?
Mm-hmm.
The spin the little soccer men? We would wait in line to play because we only had one foosball table or a pool table. Or so they can do so many more things with that money. They can buy computers. And so I get it. I get why Conor did it in the way that he did too. Listen, man, to want an itemized idea of where that money's going when you're giving it to a foundation like that, that's not out of question. It's a massive amount of money to give away. So if you want to know where that money's going, that's not wrong by Conor. But ultimately the kids win. And I like it because now if you're playing mental warfare, now that town that holds Dustin up high, I saw it in the newspaper in my hometown. There's kids out in the parking lot with signs that say, thank you, Conor.
Wow.
Right? So all those kids that idolize Dustin Poirier, and they'll probably root for Dustin still in the fight. They will. But now they're
maybe not
what was done to them by Conor McGregor. It's crazy.
Maybe not.
Because here's the reality of it. Call a spade, right? Dustin can't give 500 grand to a charity because he doesn't have the money that McGregor has. So that'll probably be the single biggest donation that these kids have ever received.
Look, there was a chance that, you know, this was trending in the direction of, you know, no donation, right? I don't like the way you've handled it, blah, blah, blah. So in the end, I have no problem with it. He said he was going to donate to a charity in Lafayette. He donated to a charity in Lafayette. In the end, it wasn't to the original charity, but hey, he put his money where his mouth is. All this says, I mean, at the end of the day, here we are talking about a summer camp in Lafayette, Louisiana. This has raised the interest in
the fight. It's not a summer camp. It's an actual boys club.
No, but I think it's going to go to their summer camp initiative so that kids can go to summer camp this summer.
That's going to do so much more than that. 500 grand in Lafayette goes a really long way.
Well, there you go. So good on him. And I think everyone's now looking forward to seeing the pre-fight press conference, the weigh-ins. Man,
they're not going to be holding they're not going to be holding each other's whiskey and hot sauce anymore.
Right.
It's going
to
be good.
All right. July 10th in Las Vegas. Now, we have to talk about something else that's been brewing over the past few days. The heavyweight division, DC, is hot and heavy right now because we know that there's a situation with Francis Ngannou, who's the new champion, who, by the way, went home to Cameroon. I mean, this is straight out of, I don't know, a movie. I don't know what movie, but it's just like those scenes. Did you see those scenes? The guy's got a freaking parade, and it seemed like the whole country was there. It was unbelievable. His mom is there.
You hit the nail on the head. You said before, like, winning a title in the UFC didn't even get a caption in the newspaper a lot of times. Now, people are really taking notice. That just shows you how big the sport has gotten.
It's a beautiful thing, and it's well-deserved. And so I spoke to Derek Lewis last week, and he said, oh, I'm in. You know, I agreed to June 12th. He couldn't do it, but, you know, I'm expecting it later this summer. Then we find out John Jones has parted ways with first round management, Malki Kawa, Abe Kawa. And now, if you notice on social media, Jones talking a lot more like he's got the fight. Now, let me make something very clear here. The status of the Jones and Ngannou fight, or lack thereof, has nothing to do with first round management. A lot of people don't know this, but John Jones and Malki Kawa haven't talked for at least 3 or so years, if not more. They just kind of went their separate ways. As a result, John was working with Abraham Kawa, but it was more on the sort of marketing side, sponsorship side. Abe was not negotiating on his behalf. Jones was doing that negotiation. So now, is there a possibility that Jones is like, all right, I need to get new management. As a result of that, I need to, you know, part ways with these guys. It seemed like it was inevitable. And so is he going to maybe pick another manager, maybe a manager who's in good standing with the UFC, and perhaps that will help revive the fight? That remains to be seen. How do you feel like this plays out? Do you, you know, and a lot of people brought up Derek Lewis is a first round management guy and he's fully entrenched there. So that made things potentially a little awkward. But again, first round had nothing to do with that. He needed a clean break. I'm just curious if Jones now signs with a new manager, mm-hmm. helps get the deal done. And that means Derek Lewis is on the outside looking in, and we actually get to see the Jones and Ngannou fight next.
You know what's crazy about that whole thing? I saw Ali Abdelaziz the other day talking about Jones.
Hmm.
This, I don't know if this happened right after Jones left first round, but Khabib, who is the most loyal guy in the world, when that first was brought up, they asked me. Like, Khabib's like, Ali wants to talk to you about something, right? And Ali asked me about that, like, what if I work with Jones? Would it offend you? I don't care, right? I don't even think about it like that.
Why would it offend you?
Because, you know, him and I's rival, like rivalry and how much we don't.
But you're not represented by him.
I know, but that's just how, that's how Khabib, man. The dude's the most loyal friend that you'll ever find in your entire life. And if somebody's on the outside of mine, he ain't messing with it. You know what I'm saying? So like that's him in a nutshell. And, but, I see people saying that maybe it's going to be Ali that represents Jones, and Ali has done a good job of making deals with the UFC. With that being said, it'll ultimately be up to Jones to decide whether or not he wants to fight this dude, because the fight's his, right? It's going to be a big number, but how big of a number does it need to be for Jones to step inside the octagon? Listen, Ariel, John Jones deserves his money. The dude has done tremendous things in the sport. But is John Jones going to have a number so large that it's unrealistic? That's the question. Because I know that they're going to pay him. They said, show me, they said, when John Jones said, show me the money. I'm trying to really like maneuver my conversations, right? Because I have internal conversations. Mm-hmm. It's like,
no, spill the tea, DC. Let's go. Listen, I'm here all day.
It's almost like John Jones says, show me the money, mm-hmm. right? We're going to show John Jones the money. So it's going to be ultimately if he wants to fight.
I want to know where this $30 million came from, because Danny keeps saying $30 million, and then John keeps saying, I never said $30 million. So where did this number come from? This number
that said 30, Dana?
Dana keeps saying he asked for 30. John keeps saying he never asked for 30. So I think there needs to be an in between, right?
Somewhere in the middle. The number lies somewhere in the middle. You know that.
15?
Probably. The number lies somewhere in the middle. If one's saying 30, one's saying I didn't say 30.
Does he deserve 15? I think so. That fight does big numbers.
It does. It does big numbers.
It's massive. Does over a million pay-per-view buys.
I think he does deserve a large number.
This is
I don't believe if Conor McGregor is, and I don't know what Conor makes.
Makes
but
more than
I've
that.
Heard I heard Conor makes like $15 million or something.
More.
Just no, to show up. Oh, and okay. Then he gets all the pay-per-view, right? Like if Conor makes 15 to show up, Jones shouldn't make what Conor McGregor makes.
Who knows? I mean, we don't know the number.
If Conor McGregor makes something in that range, Jones shouldn't make what Conor McGregor makes. It should be a tier beneath that. Does John Jones make what Khabib makes? If Khabib makes 8 to 10, yes. Mm. But I don't believe he should make what Conor McGregor makes. I do believe that Conor McGregor, there should be a difference in the pay scale because of what he has meant to the company. But in the 8 to 10 range, I think that works. And I'm not – and I'm telling you, I believe with 100% certainty, they would give him $10 million to show up and fight Francis Ngannou.
You think so?
I believe that. Mm-hmm. I do believe that. 15 to 20, like Conor, I don't believe that. But 10,
here's the thing.
Absolutely.
If you're a fan of Jones, if you're a fan of seeing this fight happen.
And that's him getting his money.
Sure.
Because he's never made $10 million before to show. He said he made five, right? He said
something
he makes
like that,
five.
But again, yeah.
So if he makes five, then you're doubling what he makes to go and fight Francis. No, here's the problem. Here's mm-hmm. the problem. And this is not me. Like, here's the – God, this is so hard.
Why is it hard?
Of our history. Because of our history.
I hear you.
It always comes off like I'm trying to doubt and badmouth this guy when I'm not.
I hear you.
Here's the issue with Jones is you're never certain what's going to come after. And that's the therein lies the problem.
What do you mean?
Because what if something happens after? What if and this is why it's so hard. We fought on a number of occasions, and every time something happened after, what if something happens after? Now you got a vacant heavyweight championship and you paid this guy all this money. That's the problem. And it's hard for me to say that because of our history. But it's like UFC 214, him and I. He beat me. Take your belt, take your money, go home. But instead, there's an issue. Now what? You understand? You're going to just put the belt back on Francis. It's like there's just so many different issues. You have to believe.
Look, here's the facts. Nothing's happened to him of that sort in a year.
But it has, though. But it has, even before the Gustafson fight, it was happening. That's why the fight was moved.
Oh, I'm talking about, no, in a year. In a year, I said. In a year. So we're on a streak of a year now where he had that thing at the beginning of the pandemic, at the very, very beginning, if you recall, caught on camera. In this. But since then, it has been better behavior.
And you hope that it continues down that path.
But I don't think that should be a deterrent for making this fight.
No, I'm just saying, though. It just
makes
it worrisome.
I get
it. Because again, you're built. Remember before they were like, I'm never main evented with John Jones again.
That was a long time ago. They main evented a gazillion times since then.
But this is what I'm saying. It makes it scary as an organization.
By the way, they also said that about Amanda Nunes.
I believe, listen to me right now. Daniel Cormier believes that John Jones should get his money. John Jones should get the fight. John Jones deserves the right to get whatever he decides to get. And I'm happy that John Jones has not had those issues in the last year. Make myself as clear as I can be. I am in support of this fight happening. What I'm saying is you cannot just ignore that things have happened in the past when I'll give you 30 million. Because the biggest issue was always, it was just about time. It was just every time something happened like that, he just lost some time. He was so young, time didn't really matter. Now it's like, let's go and do this thing the right way, Jones, if you're going to become the heavyweight champion of the world, beating a Francis Ngannou.
I just wanted to add, and that's all very well said, that if you are a fan of Jones, if you are a fan of seeing this fight happen, you should root for him signing with new management, because he was doing this on his own. And it's tough for someone to negotiate on their own. It's good to have that in between. And let's be honest, if he does sign with an Ali, that's probably good news for you if you're a Jones fan, because Ali has that relationship with the UFC and he's going to be able to make that deal with them, it would appear, given his history. And so I'm really curious to see what he ends up doing from a business standpoint, because if he decides to go solo, we're probably not going to get that fight anytime soon. If he decides to go with a good manager who has a history of doing good business and deals with the UFC, could be a sign of better things to come.
But that's the thing about Jones, though, right? And that's what you got to respect. He understands that he's valuable. So him being by himself is not that bad, because he's not going to.
It just gets personal, right? When you're negotiating on your behalf, it gets personal.
Less than what he thinks he deserves, which is the right approach, right? He knows his value. The guy's won.
100%. By the way, I'm the first. I say give him 30 million. I don't care. Give him. The guy deserves it. Do it for back pay.
Me.
Yeah.
If I had to negotiate a contract with the UFC individually, not good, because I want to please people. I want to make sure that the relationships stay intact. Jones doesn't care about that because he puts his value above all, which is okay. So, yeah, he can get a manager, make it happen. If not, I think he'll make it happen if he wants to make the fight. If you want, it's his. But Derek Lewis will be the fight if not. And guess what? It's a tough fight for Francis.
Oh, it's a very tough fight. It'll be way better than the first fight. It'll be intriguing. Under any other circumstance, by the way, if Jones was still the light heavyweight champion, this would be a phenomenal fight, a highly anticipated fight. Here's all that I ask of this situation and everyone involved in the situation. Can we make a good faith effort to make this fight happen? Because what it seems like to me now is phone call, blah, blah, blah. We don't talk for 2 weeks. Why can't we get on a plane, sit in a room, and try to make this happen? The same way, you know, when a big free agent is about to either re-sign or leave a team or go to a new whatever, like, good faith. Let's do this the right way. This fight is too special. It's too good. It's too big. It's too historic to just go like, you know, you threw out a number 8 months ago. We're not interested. We're moving on to the next guy. Good faith effort. Make this fight. At least try to make the fight happen as a proper negotiation. Sit down face to face. Have a freaking plexiglass in front of you if you're worried about it. Like, can we just do this the right way? Like actual, you know, professionals do. That's all I ask. That's what I want to see happen.
Listen, if you're smart, and I want to see the fight too, But if I'm smart, if I'm Jones, and I'm not, like I said weeks ago, he's not afraid of Francis. But if I'm smart and I'm Jones, do you see what plays out between those two? Because Jones beat me twice. I beat Derek. Like, hey, man, maybe Derek beats this dude again, and I go beat Derek, become the heavyweight champion of the world.
I know, so, but I mean, the clock is ticking. You know, it's been a year and a half.
There's some. Again, time is not that important to him because he's so young. How old is Jones?
He's still under 35.
Is he 31? Is he 32?
No, he's definitely 32. I'll tell you right now.
He's Dario, I started fighting at 31.
I know, but he's taking like, a lot of damage. Of time. He's taking damage. Time. He's 33. Time. Turning 34 in July.
Yeah, Jones has time, right? So, like, yeah, this is the most intriguing, interesting situation that we have in mixed martial arts right now because there are so many different factors at play. I love being on the outside of these types of things now.
Well, speaking of a guy, by the way, before we say goodbye, who is still very young, but feels like he's been fighting forever. I mean, he was fighting when he was a teenager. Hey, shout out to Rory McDonald. Got a big win in his PFL debut. Looked fantastic. And yes, I know Curtis Millender isn't on the level of the guys, but hey, get the win. Get your confidence back. PFL is putting on a nice presentation. I think
those guys have done well. I thought Randy's done well. I think Florian's, it feels Kenny's, good to see Kenny.
Oh, so good.
Back in that seat, man. He's doing really good. I'm happy for Ken Flo because he's such a smart analyst, man. He's a great commentator. And, you know, I think that the time away from this thing has made him realize like how much he loves doing it. And he seems so ready every time
he's out. Sean O'Connell does a great job as well as a former fighter turned play-by-play guy. Very, very hard to do. Look, I've always been a fan of more options, competition, different places for fighters. Great to see one have those four shows on Wednesday nights. Unfortunately, Eddie Alvarez losing again, so that was kind of a bummer to see happen. What a crazy fight that was. But I like what PFL is doing. They got Kayla Harrison this week, Fabricio Verdum. So, again, an opportunity for another veteran to get back on track, so to speak. You got Clarissa Shields coming up. So this is all very good stuff. And speaking of competition, unfortunately, we're not getting Yoel Romero this Friday. We were supposed to get that fight against Rumble Johnson, the fight that we put together.
Yeah. What happened there, though? Like, what happened? Like, why is Yoel out? Like, that's the problem when guys get older like that. They'll start to fail physicals at times if commissions are being honest. Like, one time I don't know who it was that got cleared to fight. And I was like, how in the world did this dude? It was Chuck Liddell. How did Chuck get cleared to fight?
Like, well, this is a bit different.
But I understand. How does anyone get cleared to fight whenever it seems like they're just not there in terms of everything? When I turned 40, I took so many more tests in order to get to a fight.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It's good whenever people are doing it the right way. And they obviously were checking you all to make sure that he's in a place where he can compete at the highest level.
So what I was told was he failed his medicals, eye issue. Weirdly enough, and having been able to confirm which eye it was, and most people won't tell you, but if you go back to Izzy's win over him in the post-fight press conference, Izzy was talking about some concern that Izzy had about Yoel's eye, that he said his eye was concerning. And so now this has come up again. So hopefully he'll be able to fight. They said they're hoping in 1 to 2 months. Rumble is fighting this weekend against an alternate, but you know, I mean, maybe we'll see that there? Fight.
Like, so he's not fighting Rumble then, because if Rumble beats this guy and moves forward in the tournament, now Yoel's just kind of out of the tournament.
But reminiscent of the Strikeforce heavyweight. I'm about to say,
being out of a tournament doesn't mean you can't come back in that piece.
crazy. All right. Crazy. Well, DC, we got to say goodbye. Yes.
My boy, Tyron Woodley. Give T-Wood some shout out, man. T-Wood back on the TV the other day. That was good to see, right? Talking about Kenny Florian being back, doing a good job. But Tyron being back at the desk, I think Tyron is a natural in that position. He did fantastic this weekend.
He's in the upper echelon of analysts. He had not done one since September of 2019. Way too long. But I was singing his praises all weekend, so I didn't want to go over the top. I didn't want to make you or anyone jealous.
Yeah, you're not that guy, right? No, I'm telling you, he did a fantastic job. Tyron's the man. He is. I don't know what his fight career looks like, but I believe that he has a long career in broadcasting if he chooses to do it.
I was going to say, and I echo everything you just said, I don't know which main event we're going to be talking about next Monday. In fact, in the middle of the show, I just got word that, now it's starting to make sense why they didn't talk about the Waterson-Rodriguez fight. This is all happening as we speak. So I don't know what's going to happen. We'll talk about something. I know that.
So what did you just get word of? You can't do that.
Well, I can't. I mean, it's still developing.
Tell me. I mean, you just asked me. You grab your coffee and said, DC, spill the tea.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, come on. What? You got word what? Tell me. You can't say I got word. You could have just not said anything. So you got word what? Because guess what? I'm working this weekend. Help me out.
Back next week. Same time and place. Until then, we say peace. We're out of here.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.